Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how we doing? Did we have a great 4th of July weekend?
I did have a great 4th of July weekend, and you know what the end of the 4th of July signifies is the beginning of basically the college football season. My dog picks the worst times to start lapping water, Jim. Every time I start talking, just unbelievable. We're not even a minute into the show yet, and he's like, I got to have some water. I got to make my presence felt. But I had a great 4th of July. I hope you had a good 4th of July. But really, that's like the line of demarcation. After the 4th weekend, then you start really focusing ahead on college football.
That is really – and it's not even us who follows it. I've had people whose businesses depend on college football, and they say to me, it's worthless to do anything before the 4th of July, advertising and things like that. Once it hits the 4th, though – that's when people start thinking about it, start making arrangements for the game. Where are we going to stay? Tailgating? What are our plans? It all starts with the 4th of July. You are right. And as far as the dog goes, we just got to point out to our listeners, if they're hearing that lapping of water, it's not you. It's your dog.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. It's not me. I can't do two voices at once.
And what's the dog's name?
Biscuit.
Biscuit. Okay. So fans, that is Biscuit that you will hear in the background lapping water, occasionally a little bark or two. And if you hear barking, that's not Dustin either.
Yeah.
It might be me, but it's probably Biscuit. All right, Dustin, let's get to our show topic. And I'm really interested in this, going to be curious to hear your responses. We kind of bumped into this last week, and we've kind of hit it before. And it's kind of – I want to talk to you about how to build a college football program, because there is so much more to it. And we've got so much going on now over the last couple of years with the portal, with NIL. Now it's the Howell settlement. There's so many things going on that is changing college football right to its core. And a lot of fans are reacting negatively to all of that. So look, and one last thing I want to add into this, which is, I think, an interesting aspect to this conversation. I'm close to the Penn State program, which has a very good football program, very poor basketball program. You are close to the Purdue program, where it's just the opposite, an exceptional basketball program, struggling mightily with football. And I think in this discussion about how to build a program, we've got like Exhibit A and Exhibit B to look at in some of our determination.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. We're talking about basically opposite ends of the spectrum here, because I think, as I mentioned last week, or maybe a couple weeks ago, I don't remember, the way that a lot of places are kind of going to go with this revenue share, and this is just a brief example to kind of, you know, as an appetizer to what we're going to talk about today, talked about how Penn State, a lot of schools, let me preface it this way, are going to spend about 75% of that revenue share on football, maybe about 15% on men's basketball, and then the 10%, depending on, you know, some of it for Penn State, it may go to wrestling or, you know, other programs that are, you know, women's basketball, volleyball. Their volleyball program is very good, softball. So there's a lot of different avenues it can go. With Purdue, they're going to go, it's very similar, but it was going to be a little less on the football side, a little bit more on the men's basketball side, and then basically volleyball and women's basketball. So I would assume that Penn State's probably going to put a little bit more into their football program. And that to me is just like, it's almost like the historic, hey, you've earned it. And so we're going to give you, we know that this is our bread and butter on the same side with basketball. Hey, we know for Purdue, This is where we've, you know, been successful. We're going to continue to want to be successful in that regard. That's what our fans really want, but we're still going to spend a large portion of our money on college football.
Well, and also just to understand why the vast majority of the money is going to go into football and then men's basketball second. And that's not just a Penn State Purdue discussion. That's the way it's going to be nationally, is it's revenue sharing. Where does the revenue come from? Football and then men's basketball. Right. So with the House settlement, schools are going to be able to distribute about $20 or $21 million to the student athletes per year. They don't have to distribute all of it, but it's up to that point. What you're going to see is the vast majority of it is going to go to football.
Mm-hmm.
Then of what's left, the majority is going to go to men's basketball. Then the distribution to the rest, it might vary just a little based on, as you mentioned, at Penn State, wrestling is important, like it is in Iowa. At Oklahoma, women's softball is very important. So perhaps they'll get the money. And I think the other thing to point out is different schools have a different number of sports. So at Penn State, they have over 30 sports. I think, for example, Alabama, I think, has 17.
Yeah.
Now, will it have a great effect? Not really, because the majority, both schools, it's going to football. So let's start with that. The fact that schools will be able to pay the student athletes a good amount of money, is that going to change college football?
I don't think so. And the reason I say this is because this has been my argument, and I'll get into, there's going to be some outliers here, I think, too, that maybe we can talk about. But I think generally speaking, when you look at, so the revenue sharing is pretty much going to be the same number across the board. So that's probably not going to change too much from school to school. It'll be probably a pretty general statistical figure. And then the NIL is when it's going to come back into play, because that's not going anywhere. So where are you going to get better NIL opportunities? But this money was used by these schools beforehand. And what did we always see updates with? The locker room, the practice facility, the training table, the nutrition, all that stuff, the weight room, recovery rooms, the players' lounges. That's where that money was dispersed. And so you still had the premier programs, Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan, you know, to some extent Clemson, usually had the better facilities. So now that money is just going to go to the players. So I don't know that it's going to change the dynamic that much in terms of, are we going to have more parity? Are we going to have, teams are going to have a better, maybe at some point it'll create more of an equal playing ground. But my argument has always been that there's never really been parity in college football, at least to the extent that we see maybe in college basketball or other sports. Why would it start now? And I still think that's somewhat true. I think actually what creates more of a level playing field is the expansion of the college football playoff.
How so?
In the sense that if you're able, when you had only, 8 to 10 teams that got in, the top recruits are typically going to flock to those 8 or 10 programs. You know, Ohio State, Alabama, Penn State was often in contention, but didn't make it until this year. Notre Dame, some of those other schools that Clemson, LSU that had gotten in there, won a championship or performed well or were regularly getting in there. That's where the top recruits are going to go. And now SMU can sneak into the field. Boise State can get in there. Penn State got in there for the first time. So Indiana got in there. So now you can see this disbursement of talent where, hey, we don't have to go undefeated and win our conference to get into the championship. If we can get 10 wins, especially if you're in the Big Ten of the SEC, anybody's going to have a chance. If Purdue has a big year, they have a chance. I'm not saying that that you're going to see a program like an Indiana, Illinois, Purdue, Northwestern jump in and become a regular playoff contender, but once every 8 to 10 years, they're going to be in the discussion. And I think overwhelmingly, that's going to be what helps. That's going to be what helps parity in college football more so than the money, at least in my opinion.
That's a very good point. I also agree. You made another great point when you talked about there has not been parity in college football ever. Okay. There's dynasties. It seems like every decade we see new dynasties. And prior to NIL, with the 14 college playoffs, you could pretty much book it. Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson had their run. Maybe there was a fifth or sixth team who could threaten it, but that was it, okay? And now with the 12-team playoff, perhaps turning into 14 or 16, many more teams have that opportunity. But the other thing is, Dustin, I think money creates an opportunity for somebody else to knock on that door. You mentioned a team I often mention, SMU. SMU bought their way into the ACC, have enough money behind them. If it comes to NIL, they're essentially declaring, we want to be play with the big boys, and we're going to spend what it takes to get there.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And maybe I don't think we're going to see this vast majority of like parity, but I think that there can be some schools that maybe weren't relevant that could become, because think about this. If you had a big time donor or big name, whatever you want to say, who had a lot of money and he was an alum of Arkansas State, and he gets together with five other people that graduated from Arkansas State with big pockets, and they said, hey, look, we can actually make an impact here. You could see an Arkansas State rise to be like a Gonzaga that we see in college basketball, right? And so I think that there could be a case like that. I think SMU is probably the best example because of the money in Dallas, that oil money, Jim. I don't know that it's going to be a year where you're going to have all 136 programs are going to be created an equal playing field. But I think that there could be a team here or there that you typically would look past as a group of five. And now all of a sudden they could emerge as a legitimate national championship contender. If at least that opportunity is there. Let me say it that way.
It is. It's a road. It's a path that these folks could choose to travel. And SMU is the example of a team that's done it successfully. When we come back, we're going to talk about some teams who tried it and it didn't work when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. I hope some of these schools are listening to us. We're going to give them great advice on how to build a program here, Dustin. So
yes,
if they're smart enough to listen to us. The first thing you start out with is lots of money. And it was funny. We've been using SMU as the example, who kind of bought their way there. It reminds me of the story. There's a guy who's a former basketball player at SMU who is one of these oil guys, got the money. He's leading the run. And I heard him in an interview. And to get into the ACC, they are giving up all their media revenue in the ACC for like the next 7 years. And they're sacrificing like $200 million. And the interviewer asked him about that, and he just said, $200 million, big deal. You know, like the way you and I would talk about $2, that's the way he talked about $200 million. And to their credit, got to the ACC, did a great job, made the playoffs. Their plan appears to be working. But it doesn't always work when it's just money, Dustin. And I think I always use as my prime example Texas A&M. They went out and they were spending money before everybody else was on NIL, bringing in very big-time recruiting classes. Where's it gotten them?
Yeah, not very far, especially under Jimbo Fisher. There still has to be a level of team chemistry and getting the right guys. And we can go back, Jim, even before NIL. Just because you have a big recruiting – now, typically, yes, you do have to have great players to be in the championship conversation, so don't get this mixed up. But if you go back to 2015, Michigan State won the Big Ten. They had that win over Ohio State on the road, got into the college football playoff. I think they were 12-1 after winning the Big Ten, maybe, and then got raced by Alabama. I think it was like 31-38, something like that. And Mark D'Antonio made the decision, we got to get more talent if we want to compete for a national championship. And the recruiting classes improved, and they got more 4- and 5-star kids. They were not really that good ever again because those guys did not mesh well. They did not fit the culture that had been established at Michigan. Well, we can talk about that a different day. But they didn't fit into basically guys that kind of thought they were too good to follow the rules. Guys who got into trouble with the law and got in trouble on campus. And so it can't be everything. I think there is still a lot in creating that culture in the locker room, which is the greatest, you know, cliche in sports, but I think you do have to have a strong culture, bringing in the right guys who fit your system, regardless of star rankings. Because I think too often, especially as fans and as media personalities, we look at a guy's star rating or his ranking on, you know, Rivals or 24/7 or ESPN or On3 or whatever, and think, oh, we got to get this guy, or this guy's going to come in and immediately be an awesome running back, quarterback, offensive lineman. It's not always the case. So, yes, the money can lead to good things. You can have access to better players. You can get stronger recruiting classes. Those are things you need, but you still have to make sure you're recruiting the right guys, make sure they're cultural fits. Otherwise, you could have a situation where you have Texas A&M, where you have this historic recruiting class, the best that's ever been assembled, and you can go 5-7.
Yes. And I'll use Ole Miss, and I think it was before NIL, but somehow out of nowhere, Ole Miss had the number one recruiting class.
Yes. Yep.
You could make your own assumption as to what happened there. It didn't translate to on the field. And our colleague here, Andy Shea, often says, it's not about getting the best players, it's about getting the right players. And so when you talk about the Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, they do get the best players, but the five-star guys, you see the rankings, you know, with Nick Saban, I think it was 9 out of 10 years he had the number one recruiting class. And the 1 year he didn't, I think he was second, okay? But he's not just getting the best players. He's getting his pick of the best players. And I think teams like Texas A&M, for example, they chase the five stars, you know? They weren't chasing the best fit at five stars. And, again, being close to the Penn State program, over these years, James Franklin gets a lot of heat. Interestingly enough, he's highly complimented for his recruiting ability. But if you look at his recruiting classes, Dustin, they are typically like in the area, ranked like 12th to 15th in the country every year. Yet he still has a top 10 finish. So there's the prime example that I'm close enough to that I could say, you know what? Penn State doesn't bring in the best teams, top 10 recruiting classes, but they still finish that way. Now I'm going to argue the other side. Ironically, in the last 10 years or so, their one top 10 class, Dustin, was in 2002. And that's when they brought in Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Denai Dennis Sutton. The fact is they are now where they are one of the favorites to win a national championship, because not only is it the right guys, they also had that 2002 recruiting class that they built this team around.
Right. And I think, to your point, the thing that's key there is that James Franklin didn't sacrifice his evaluation process. He didn't the process, if you will, the phrase that Nick Saban, you know, made so famous. He didn't sacrifice that to try to basically get rich quick. There are some guys who have done that and ended up broke, and he did not do that. So the fact that he was able, the longevity that he had a top 15, it's not like a top 15 recruiting class is a bad thing. That's still, you're still in the top, gosh, what, 10, I don't even know, 10%, 8% of college football when you're doing that. So he put himself in a good spot, and then that set him up to bring in some of these top 10 guys, you know, these a top 10 class, and get the players that you need that are necessary to compete for a national championship. And now the fact that, again, you have Penn State's got great NIL, and they get into the playoff, and they make a deep run in the college football playoff, that's going to be even more attractive. So I think the fact that James Franklin still finds the right pieces, because, again, he could have, after they beat Ohio State, won the Big Ten championship in 2016, he could have very easily said, not good enough. We got to get the cream of the crop, and they got to fit in, or they don't have to fit in. We just got to get the very best players in here. And he could have sold his soul a little bit and gambled on that, but he didn't. And so I think that this is now the long-term payoff, is getting better recruits and players that can compete for a national championship, because he was so consistent in his recruiting process.
Well, it also leads, Dustin, to what is the strategy here? And we had on our program a couple weeks Penn State's GM, Andy Frank, and he talked generally about how, you know, the distribution of the money, and Penn State, he said, is going to value retention of players, keeping their players. But it might be at the sacrifice of getting some of the big names in recruiting. We've kind of already seen that with Penn State's recruiting this year. There have been several very big names that Penn State lost out on. And, you know, it's, I think there's going to be distinct strategies in how to distribute the money. Do you take that hot shot five-star quarterback and throw a whole bunch of money at him, Dustin, or not? Is there a risk of disturbing your locker room if you're paying that freshman a lot of money before he's gotten there and done anything yet? The risk you run is you're not going to get that guy because somebody else is going to pay him.
That's correct. But here I don't know the math on this. I used to know the math on this, but I stopped working at Saturday Tradition about 3 years ago. So I don't know. It's not up to date, but the number of five-star quarterbacks that enter the transfer portal after 1 or 2 years. So to me, pay the guys that, you know, that are going to do well. They have been on your roster that you value. And then with the transfer portal, if that kid doesn't work out somewhere else, or if he ends up being a bust, I am not a huge fan. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes you just have to make that sacrifice and say, yeah, this Arch Manning kid is worth the dough, or Quinn Ewers is worth the dough. But there was, do you remember Tate Martell at Ohio State? And I don't mean to throw players under the bus, but he was a heavily recruited. He's going to be the next big thing at Ohio State. And his career never really worked out. So it's such a gamble, and it's a gamble on any player. But when it's the quarterback, that is the guy who touches the ball every single possession. It's the most important position in sports. To me, I'd rather have a guy who everybody can rally around. Again, with talking about James Franklin, guys like Sean Clifford, Trace McSorley, now Drew Allard. Like, I would value a guy that can get his team excited and ready to go and rally around them, as opposed to a guy that just kind of walks in there and thinks he owns the starting job, doesn't have to work for it because he was paid $5 million coming out of high school to commit to a program.
Now, the counter, and I agree with you, the counterpoint being, if you're Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia, you could kind of get away with that. But what if you're Texas Tech? What if you're a team that is in the lower half of the Big Ten? You're with Purdue, okay? Would it behoove Purdue to throw a boatload of money at a big-name quarterback kind of as the carrying card, the lost leader, the whatever that brings excitement to the program and maybe brings in more recruits who might not have even considered Purdue, but because Purdue brought in this five-star quarterback, it gets enough talk, enough momentum that things go for it. Is it worth the risk for a team like Purdue?
I don't think so. The reason being is I think if you are a team like a Purdue or an Illinois, and you, if you have a quarterback who has a really good season, out the door, gone. In my opinion, somebody's going to poach him, going to give him a better offer. So to me, if I'm a lower level, now that's not to say you can't bring in a guy who you think's going to be really good, and take a chance on him. I think that they're in certain situations, sure, why not? But to that point, I think it's going to be even more important for a team like a Purdue or Illinois. Like, look, the reason we'll talk about this on the other side, but I've got some arguments against that.
All right. We'll let you pick it up when we start next quarter. Stick around.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking about how to build a program, a college football program. Dustin, we had to go to a break, and I cut you off. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
So what I was talking about was why I don't think it's necessarily advantageous for a team like a Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern to go out and drop a ton of money on a quarterback to bring him in and try to bring in other recruits. Number one, because if you spend a lot of money on one player, how much are you going to have for some of those other guys? So you may get the five-star quarterback guy, but then you may not have enough left over to entice the four-star running back or the high four-star wide receivers or the offensive line you need to protect the quarterback. Again, I'll go back. You could get a five-star quarterback if your offensive line sucks. Look at what happened to Christian Hackenberg back in the 2010s. It didn't work out for him. You have to have a good offense. You have to have those pieces around him. The other thing, Jim, what's the one Big Ten team we're all talking about as potentially a sneaker this year getting into the playoff?
Illinois.
And a big reason for that is because they return a lot of their players from last season. And I don't think anybody is sitting here saying Illinois is going to be the next power team in the Big Ten. But the way the way Brett Bielema has assembled his team and the fact that they do have a returning quarterback now in Luke Altmaier, who has been – I don't think he's the best – I think he's a very good quarterback for Illinois. I don't think he's like among the best in college football. I think he's very good for what they need their offense to be, for the pieces around him. And so if you're Illinois, you've kind of laid the foundation. You set the groundwork. You've developed the blueprint as to how to be successful in these spurts. I think after this year, there could be a fall off for Illinois where maybe they only get 5 to 7 wins. But if they can rebuild and say, hey, you know what? We're going to go through this basically 4-year plan where we're going to be bad 1 year. We're going to continue to improve. And then these 2 years, we're going to get to 9 or 10 wins and then we'll start all over. Man, if you can do that regularly, if you're in Illinois, Purdue, Northwestern, Rutgers, Maryland, and you can figure that out, your fan base is going to be ecstatic.
And you know you have a chance to get to that point of 10 wins, maybe now make the playoffs. And mm-hmm. Dustin, you gave a good example there and great opportunity for me to segue. So if we're not going to use money and throw it at the big names, is it the coach? That's who we got. We got to get that pick correctly, don't we?
Yes. I think that's more. I still think that's the most important thing, because I will contest. Now, this is my opinion, and I'm sure not a lot of Penn State people, especially considering the circumstances last year, tuned in to watch Purdue football. But I had to sit there begrudgingly watch every snap, Jim, and it wasn't always pleasant. In fact, most of it was not pleasant. They had Max Clair, a tight end who went to Ohio State. Dylan Thieneman, an All-American safety who transferred to Oregon. Will Helt, a really good defensive end who transferred to Clemson. They had talent on that roster. Hudson Card, I still think I don't think he's a great quarterback, but I think he was a good enough quarterback. I think there was enough talent on that team, even as tough as the schedule was, to win five or six games and at least compete for bowl eligibility and be competitive. They were 1-11 and got blown out by 40 points every week. So you have to get – if you gave Jeff Brohm that roster, if you gave Barry Odom that roster, I'm not saying that that team's like 9-3. Don't get me wrong. But I think that that's a very competitive 5-7 win squad. And so you have to know – you have to have the guy who knows how to use the talent and create that chemistry and do the right things in order to be successful.
Now – you're right. Penn State fans did not sit every week and search for the Purdue game on TV. However, we did get to see the one game against Penn State, and yes, they were awful. And it wasn't like, they're just physically outmanned, which they were.
Yes.
But the mistakes that they made had nothing to do with physical talent. They just... breakdowns in the defensive backfield and Penn State receivers are running free, which didn't happen a lot last year, by the way. So, but the question is, how do you get that right coach, know he's the right guy, and give him the time to build a program? Now, I knew we were going to be talking about Purdue, Dustin. So I was a little bit curious and I did a little bit of homework. And since 1970, Purdue has had 12 coaches.
Yep.
And many of them, I just kept track of how many years they were there. 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 6, 4, 4. The last one, 2 years. How big a factor is it that, yes, you got to have the right guy, but do you also have to give them the time to build something?
Yes, I think so. The most recent, so I think it was pretty clear cut when you looked at that I got to get my years correct. When you looked at the 2023 Purdue team, they were 4-8, had a tough schedule, but they were competitive and almost, I think they got blown out of maybe two games. They were competitive. And so you looked at that and said, okay, Ryan Walters going into year two, he's got a lot of guys coming back. He brought in some really good pieces from the transfer portal, decent recruiting class for Purdue. Let's see what he does. And the fact that it was just so bad, I don't think they had a choice. There was team was clearly not getting better. I think the same thing can be said of Daryl Hazel. He got 12, 13, 14, 15. I think he got almost 5 years, four and a half, maybe.
2013 to 2016.
2013, 14, 15. Okay, so yes, I got my years mixed up. I thought he was hired in 2012. So he got 3.5 years, and I think that that was probably the right decision. The one that I will say, Danny Hope, who took over for Joe Tiller, had them around 500 for most of his tenure there. They probably pulled the trigger too quickly. They also did not – they were a little bit like Penn State back then, where they refused to kind of update their facilities and, pony up the dough to make their football program more relevant. It was actually a big reason why Joe Tiller decided to retire, by the way. So I think you have to make the right decision. You have to get, if they would have given Danny Hope some time, I don't think he would have been as successful as Joe Tiller, but I don't think it would have been as bad as Daryl Hazel or Ryan Walters.
Well, you're doing a great job here for me, Dustin, helping me segue. And you talked about, Purdue at the time, their facilities weren't where they need to be. which that comes from university support. Mm-hmm. You know, so my question becomes, how important is that? Now, I'll use the Penn State example. James Franklin came here a little over a decade ago. Now, he was dealing with some issues that probably no other school has ever had to deal with the heavy sanctions and so on. Kept the team above water. But there's always been that little bit of hesitation and support from the university. By that, I mean, you know, we weren't the win-at-all-costs university. You know, the Alabamas and Georgias and Ohio States who went all in. Now, new athletic director, new president of the university, and James Franklin is very fond of saying this is the first time that everyone is aligned in the university. The decision was recently made to do a renovation to the stadium, you know, an $800 million renovation. And one could argue, what does that have to do with the product on the field? But it's just another indicator of the whole program rowing in the same direction, Dustin. So how important is that?
To me, it's critical. Because you only get the old saying is you only get one chance to make a good first impression, right? And that matters on the recruiting trail. If I go to Penn State, if I'm a high-level recruit and my options are, I'm just going to keep it in the Big Ten, Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan, and I go to Penn State for a visit after I just got done at Ohio State and Michigan, and I see their facilities and I see the investment that they've clearly put in, if I go to Penn State and I go, these locker rooms aren't great. Where's the players' lounge? Where's the training table? I think maybe – I still think that's critically important. It may be a little bit offset now by the fact that players can make money their own way now. But if you can see that you're going to make a similar amount of money and the facilities are that much better and you're going to get better, it probably feels like you're going to get taken care of a little bit better at those other two schools. Why would you not pick Ohio State or Michigan? And I'm not, I wasn't in there. I don't know what the difference between Ohio State's facilities and Penn State's facilities were. I'm just saying if I was a recruit on a visit and I noticed a major difference, that's probably going to weigh into my decision. Even now with me getting a paycheck, I still want to go into a place where I feel comfortable, where I feel like I'm going to get taken care of, going to get the best training, going to get the best, now I can't think of the word, Jim.
Nutrition,
accommodations, the best accommodations. There we go. I still think that's going to be a factor, especially for kids who are 16, 17, 18 years old.
Well, and I think the program that you probably should have added to that list is Oregon.
And yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
They're probably one of the best examples here of what Phil Knight has done prior to NIL with just upgrading the facilities, the locker rooms and all that. But there's also, and going back to the Penn State example, Penn State, and we would have never, in my opinion, seen this ever. Penn State went out and brought in Jim Knowles as defensive coordinator, made him the highest paid coordinator in all of college football. To me, you know, Penn State fans are stunned. If they're not, they should be. That Penn State has the highest paid coordinator in all of college football. Not Alabama, not Georgia, not Ohio State, but Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, that's pushing all your chips to the table, isn't it? And that's what you want. And by the way, if you're a fan, and I've never understood this. I don't know why people complain about their salaries. I don't have to pay it. I'm not paying them. So what do I care if it's the highest paid? But that's what a lot of people have said for Penn State for years. Like, put all your chips on the table. Be competitive with these other programs. And to me, that was a national championship level move.
It was. That is the thing. One of the big differences about this season, obviously, they're putting chips on the table by bringing back all those guys who, you know, the Drew Allers and Nick Singleton. They're making money, okay? Now, I don't think that's the only reason those players are coming back. Don't get me wrong. But they could have left and gone to other schools for more money. Nick Singleton as a free agent, what do you think he would get on the market? I'm sure, more than he's getting at Penn State. We've got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking about how to build a football program. So, Dustin, we've gone over several of the factors now with money available. You know, do you bring in the big five-star recruit at quarterback, pay him the extra money? I think the important thing is the coach. He's the CEO of the program. And I know, by the way, at Penn State, critics of James Franklin will damn him with faint praise, but, well, he's a good CEO. And they don't mean it as a compliment. But this is like a billion-dollar industry now. You better have someone who's in charge of the program, who's leading it. But it leads me to, and I think that's the starting point, is the hiring the right coach. How do you do that, Dustin? Who is the right guy? And I'll bring up a couple examples over the last couple of years. Alabama had to replace Nick Saban. There have been talks for like a decade that Dabo Swinney would be next. I don't know if Dabo Swinney wanted it, didn't want it, maybe used to want it, maybe now he's too old to make that change. But I think it's Alabama isn't looking for the guy who's been the best coach in the last 10 years. I think they were saying, we want who's the next Saban, who's going to be that guy for the next decade. So how do you find that guy? And did Alabama make the right choice? The couple other ones. North Carolina, they brought in Bill Belichick, over 70 years old, never had coached a college football team. The couple coaches that we've been talking about for years now. Nebraska brings in Matt Rhule. Wisconsin brings in Luke Fickell. Prior to Matt Rhule, Nebraska brought in Scott Frost, which seemed like the absolute perfect fit. So how do you hire that right guy, Dustin?
I think a lot of it has to do with knowing your program. And again, I'm going to use two examples that I've already used. One is going to be Ryan Walters at Purdue, because I wasn't in on the hiring process, but his hire was shortly after Oregon hired Dan Lanning, who was the defensive coordinator at Georgia. He had worked in the SEC and he just kind of worked at Oregon. He fit in, he had the right mentality. And I think Purdue thought, we've seen Ryan Walters up close. He's worked at Illinois. He's worked at Missouri. He's got kind of that Midwest, those Midwestern ties. We think we can bring him in, and maybe he'll be the next Dan Lanning. He can relate to kids on the recruiting trail. He's young. He's got a good football knowledge. And it just didn't work. Like that, what has worked at Purdue is being unique offensively. And I'm not saying they can't change and be a little bit different. But you're not going to beat Ohio State playing Ohio State football. You're not going to beat Penn State trying to play Penn State football. You've got to be unique. You've got to change it up a little bit. And so I think that that's why that was a failure. I also think when you look at Brett Bielema, perfect hire. And when that was the first hire, when he was hired, you know, after a couple of years from his firing at Arkansas, I remember thinking in the immediate knee-jerk reaction, well, that's dumb. He's not going to get him to the Big Ten championship. And then it's like, well, Illinois doesn't have to go to the Big Ten championship. He needs to establish them as a consistent winner in those 6 to 8 wins every single year. You know, once every 10 years, you're going to have a 4-8 season. Once every 10 years, you're going to have a 10-2 season. So far, that seems to be what he's doing. And it's because he's built up the offensive line. He's been able to retain his talent. And he's found diamonds in the rough at wide receiver, at running back. There's been some good kids that he's gotten out of the transfer portal and via recruiting. But a lot of those kids are three-star kids that maybe had other opportunities to go play at an Alabama or a Clemson or a South Carolina, but they know that they're going to get more playing time at an Illinois. They have a better chance to get onto the field at a place like Illinois. And so I think you have to – you can't – it's going to sound dumb because some guys just don't work out. Like, I think the big thing to me is, like, Luke Fickell wanted to completely change Wisconsin's offense. Why would you do that? For two decades, they have dominated by running the football and getting those in-state, big-bodied Wisconsin offensive linemen to just move people. And especially in today's game where, you know, you only have to get, as we said, to 10 or 11 wins, why would you completely restructure everything? So to me, you have to know the program, know what has worked in the past, and bring in those type of guys to be successful. And sometimes it's hard to identify those guys. Sometimes it's a little bit easier. Not everybody's going to be a Kurt Cignetti, though. So you've got to preach patience. And if you can take those gradual steps, maybe don't pull the trigger. Look, now I know Jim Harbaugh cheated. Let's just get that out there. But he was another guy. Couldn't get over the Ohio State hump. Could not, you know, I think he had a lot of 10-win seasons, but couldn't win the Big Ten championship game. Struggled to win bowl games. And then he put together one of the best three-year runs probably in Michigan history. That's because Michigan was patient. And that's what can happen when you are patient. And maybe James Franklin will be, you know, it would be a little bit longer for James Franklin, but maybe you see something similar with that. Because they've been patient, they've established consistency, where if they pulled the trigger on James Franklin earlier in his career, who knows where Penn State is, because you're taking a risk when you fire a well-known and well, not a well-known, but a well-adjusted and guy that's produced results consistently when you get rid of him.
And now I'm closer to the Penn State program than anywhere else. And I think that's what gets lost with James Franklin is in this decade, little more than that, that James Franklin has been there. He's built an infrastructure to the whole program. And you see it in the infrastructure was there to allow him to do something like bringing in Jim Knowles. The infrastructure is there. The support is there that you get a board of trustees voting to commit $800 million to a stadium renovation. And, you know, congratulations, I think, to the people who made the decision to bring James Franklin in, you know, a dozen years ago, coming off of Vanderbilt. And from what I know of James Franklin, he came into that interview prepared. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's often talk that he's got the binder of if he ever needs to hire a new coach, he's got his binder of information and every situation that could come up, he's ready for it. And that's what you need to build a program. And it's so difficult. And I often like to take things and compare it to private industry, you know, and how you hire someone. You're taking a risk whenever you're hiring someone. You know, hey, they gave a great interview. Does that mean they're a great worker, though? Okay. They're two different things, skill sets. And, you know, I think I mentioned earlier with Alabama, they got the who they hope is the next guy who could be the great coach, not the guy who was good for the last 10 years. It's why, personally, I think North Carolina and Bill Belichick, that's an experiment that's ain't going to work. That's my feeling on it, Dustin. And I think he's, you know, it's all so new, his ability to relate to players who are so much younger than him. By the way, insert your own joke there about the 24-year-old girlfriend and being able to relate to her. You put in your own joke. But that selection is so important, but it's got to also come with commitment from the program that will put in the money. So it leads me to, that's my way of segueing into, you see a Northwestern who's now been at the bottom of the Big Ten for several years. They had some successful years in our lifetime, but they are putting in the $800 million into their stadium. Mm-hmm. Is this now, and remember, Northwestern, Purdue, they get that same Big Ten television money. that Ohio State and Michigan get. They're getting a lot of money there. So can they just consciously say, we want to have a good program? And if you're a Northwestern with some of the alumni they have, they could have the financial support there. They're in Chicago, a great recruiting area, a great draw to, you know, just the city of Chicago. Could Northwestern just consciously say, we want to be a much better program?
I think yes and no. They are still going to be a little bit restricted because of the academic requirements. So they're not going to be able to recruit every single player. But again, I think it comes back to, so they put in the investment into their stadium. What's interesting is they were in an interesting spot where they hired David Braun. He had a big year his first year, and I think he's probably a little bit cheaper, and I think he's probably – they needed someone who was not going to come in and messy up the Pat Fitzgerald situation. They need somebody who's clean-nosed, hardworking, and even if they're not very good, need him to, you know, run a squeaky clean program. So that's going to be interesting to see if he is a long-term solution to them or not. But the point you make, like, yes, I mean, somebody could say that, but you also have to have the people willing to donate the money. If somebody comes in, I don't know who a graduate of Northwestern is, every journalist outside of me, apparently. But if everybody at ESPN that had a Northwestern degree made $10 million and said, let's pool our money together and make this one of the better NIL, you know, or I don't know what collectives are doing, but NIL opportunities for student athletes, they could easily do that. And then Northwestern could be the next, as I mentioned earlier in the show, they could be the Arkansas State, or they could be the Gonzaga, a team that, you know, from a, has elevated itself thanks to, you know, Gonzaga did it because they were able to get talent over long-term sustained success. But Northwestern could do that in a heartbeat. Purdue could do that in a heartbeat. It is an opportunity for them to do that. I just don't know how willing some of those donors are going to be to pony up the dough. It's kind of like the chicken and the egg, right? Are they going to be successful because they get that money, or do they have to show they're be successful in order to get the money?
And, you know, I'll go back to something you said earlier. You know, it's like spending on the quarterback could be a waste. The flashy sale. Gonzaga got to where they were in college basketball first by building that solid foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They got good, which then started to bring in recruits, the right, higher rated recruits. You've got to build that infrastructure first, build the program, get the right coach who's going to stick around, by the way. You know, I've used James Franklin as the example. He was at Vanderbilt, had back-to-back 9-win seasons, which was unheard of for Vanderbilt. But once he did, he moved on. He moved on to Penn State. If you're Vanderbilt, how do you get the guy who will stay there and build up the program? All right, Dustin, I hope some college football programs were listening and learned what they need to do to build their program. Thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.